The topics and opinions expressed in the following show are solely those of the hosts and their guests and not those of W4CY Radio, its employees, or affiliates. We make no recommendations or endorsements for radio show programs, services, or products mentioned on air or on our web. No liability, explicit or implied, shall be extended to W4CY Radio, or its employees, or affiliates. Any questions or comments should be directed to those show hosts. Thank you for choosing W4CY Radio.
Welcome to Let's Just Talk with Katherine Raker. Sponsored by
Buoyancy PR, Joni Sullivan Baker, Dan Perkins, author, Don Greco, novels, Drop It, Dr. James Butler, smile artist, Fame's Chocolates, JMR Productions, Songs and Stories for Soldiers, and Vital, Champions of Liberty.
You're listening to W4CY.
Hi, this is Katherine Raker of Let's Just Talk. Our guest today is Alan Gottlieb. He is a strong advocate of defense. He is a nuclear engineering graduate of the University of Tennessee, a publisher of Gun Week, chairman of the Citizens Committee for the Right to Keep and Bear Arms, and founder of the Second Amendment Foundation. He also serves on the board of directors of the American Conservative Union. You know, the U.S. Supreme Court just refused to accept a Second Amendment case that was up for review. This prompted the Second Amendment founder, Alan Gottlieb, blame Chief Justice John Roberts, who he says clearly could have accepted at least one significant gun rights case had he wanted to. Now, let's hear more on gun rights that are so important to our civil society. Welcome, Alan. How are you today?
Great, Catherine. It's really good to be with you. Thank you.
Well, you know, do you blame Justice John Roberts for this, actually?
I definitely do. I think it squarely falls right at his feet. You know, there were 10 cases before the U.S. Supreme Court dealing with gun rights. It was sort of like a cafeteria-style menu of cases to choose from. There's no excuse why the court did not choose at this time to hear one of those cases and decided to ignore them all, which sends a message to the lower courts that they can continue to thumb their noses at the Heller and McDonald Supreme Court decisions that affirm the individual right to keep and bear arms. We know we have four key judges that wanted to hear Second Amendment cases, and it takes four judges to hear a case. It takes five to win a case. And what happened is Judge Roberts wouldn't commit to being in support of any of the 10 cases, and was the one who discouraged the court from taking it. So it definitely falls at his feet, and it's really unfortunate because the Supreme Court, Catherine, for a number of years has been ignoring Second Amendment rights. It's been a decade since they passed, since they ruled on a Second Amendment case, and there's a significant number of infringements going on states that are refusing to issue permits to people to carry a firearm for self-protection, states that aren't allowing handguns to be sold because they're new modern versions and they won't add them onto their handgun, so-called handgun rosters to be sold. There's provisions that argue that you have to have micro-stamping capabilities so you can tell what bullet was fired from what gun, and it's done in a way that nobody can comply with it, so no manufacturer can even make a gun to meet those standards. We have bans on semi-automatic rifles in many places. That was up before the court as well. There were a whole slew of cases that they could have picked any one of a number to hear to redefine Second Amendment rights for the lower courts to make sure that all the circuits were in the same compliance. And it was just Roberts that basically chose and discouraged not to do it.
You wonder what side he's on sometimes. I do. At least that's my opinion. But that's just my opinion at this point.
Well, honestly, Catherine, I've given him the benefit of the doubt up until now, because quite frankly, he did vote in with the majority to defend gun rights in the Heller case. He voted with the majority to defend gun rights in the McDonald case. But since then, he's done everything he could to discourage them from ever taking another gun rights case. And now with 10 of them up at the same time, it was pretty easy to at least choose one to take a look at and to review in here. And he was the one that was the roadblock that stopped it.
Tell me about the Heller case, if you don't mind, background on it, because maybe some of my audience wouldn't really know about it unless they were really involved in, you know, gun rights. And I don't think, and this is just my opinion, that too many people even know the amendments to our Constitution or our Constitution, actually.
Well, unfortunately,
would you agree on that?
Oh, yeah, I would really agree on that. They don't really teach it in school anymore.
That's right.
I find it appalling. But the Heller case was 12 years ago. In 2008, the U.S. Supreme Court, this case was won at the appeals court level by our side, defending gun rights. And it's Washington, D.C., the city that we had sued, appealed to the U.S. Supreme Court, who then affirmed the lower court ruling that D.C.'s law that said you couldn't have a loaded functional firearm in your home for self-defense was unconstitutional. And then we brought the McDonald case in 2010 that basically knocked out the Chicago City ban on handgun ownership. And in order to do that, the U.S. Supreme Court had to not only reaffirm the Second Amendment, but had to incorporate the Second Amendment through the 14th Amendment, making it applicable to all the cities and states and political subdivisions as well. Because in the Heller case, that was against Washington, D.C., which is not a state, it's a federal enclave. So that ruling really only held against the federal government. It didn't, or its enclaves, it didn't hold against cities and states because the 14th Amendment never had a chance to be incorporated into the second, like it's been done in the First Amendment and the Fourth Amendment and the Fifth Amendment. Now that was done. Since then, the Supreme Court has rejected every opportunity to speak out against gun rights, and a lot of the lower courts have sort of said that, well, the Heller decision, the McDonald decision dealt with a gun in your own home, so therefore we're only going to limit the decision to guns in your own home. Anything with a firearm outside your home doesn't count. And that wasn't what the Heller or McDonald decisions said. It's just that they happened to deal with a law that dealt with that. And so this was a chance for the U.S. Supreme Court this year to clean that up so that you're basically saying your Second Amendment rights don't stop at your front door.
That's right. And with all the stuff that's going on right now, Alan, especially that people can actually seize part of a city, right, and they're all wearing guns, right, but we're not allowed to come in and take the city away. That bothers me, okay?
So, well, what really bothers me, Catherine, yeah, you're right, but what really bothers me, too, in some of those states, they have laws against these people passing the guns around to each other, but because they sort of agree with what they're trying to do, the politicians in cities like Chicago and Detroit, right, and Minneapolis, they'll, right, nobody, or Seattle, nobody arrests them. But if you and I were to, in those states,
that's,
we
would,
right, violate any of the gun laws, we'd be in jail.
Right, right. So they're doing it for their own political situation. Let's move away from the Supreme Court and even a higher court, the Court of Public Opinion. Has Joe Biden has been exhibiting a bit of a double standard by pointing the First Amendment rights of demonstrators while ignoring the Second Amendment rights of U.S. citizens? Let's talk about that, because I personally, I'm very frightened to have Joe Biden ever run for president at this point because of his wishy-washy nature, and I'm telling you that. So go ahead.
Well, yeah, I'm upset about his double standard on the Bill of Rights as well. He likes to pick and choose which rights he likes to support and for who he likes to,
right,
have those rights supported for. So, example, while he says he's First Amendment rights of demonstrators, he's also against gun owners' First Amendment rights if they were to demonstrate against anti-gun laws. So he's anti-First Amendment if he doesn't agree with what you're saying. He's also anti-Second Amendment. He's gone out as far as to say that he'd put Beto O'Rourke in charge of his gun control policies. And Beto has basically said that he's in favor of confiscation of firearms. So Joe Biden sort of is kind of scary. And when it comes to guns, he's not wishy-washy. He's totally against firearms rights and firearms ownership and always has been. He has never voted for one gun law that protects gun owners' rights. And he's voted for every gun law when he was in the U.S. Senate that opposed gun rights and supported all Barack Obama's anti-gun moves and executive orders as well.
Right. And Beto O'Rourke, if I remember correctly, didn't he promise during the Democratic debates that he was going to take everybody's guns away?
Yes, he said it's for confiscation, and then if you didn't turn your gun in, he'd put you in jail. So,
mm-hmm.
Again, while Biden, O'Rourke, a lot of the Democrats are not in favor of arresting any of the violent protesters, demonstrators, arsonists out there that have been rioting in the streets, they're all taking law-abiding gun owners and putting them in jail.
And they put all these wonderful Democrats in some of these big cities where they're having all these problems that are afraid to stand up for the rest of the U.S. citizens. I just want to inject something here, Alan. I was so proud of the people of Idaho that they were coming to do a demonstration within this little city, and gun owners came out to protect they were citizens of this Idaho town, and they found out where the Antifa group was, and they got there before they did. And they protected their town, and they stood up for their town. And it just, I can't even believe what's going on in Seattle, Washington. This is unreal to me. Absolutely.
Yes, it is, especially since I live in a suburb of Seattle, so I know what's going on. But, you know, it didn't make a lot of press, but in Washington State, in three suburban cities, gun owners showed up to help protect businesses. They did it in a couple mm-hmm. of cities in California. They did it in Texas. They've done it in some other states as well. But the media doesn't like to report on that. It doesn't further their agenda.
I happen to be one of those people that owns her own radio and television programming, so I'm not afraid to talk about it. So that's the difference.
Thank you.
You're welcome. You're welcome. And, you know, I belong to an organization called Veterans in Defense of Liberty, and also, you know, we believe in also sending out our veterans through a new program to teach people the Constitution and their rights. And that's why I'm very proud to belong to that organization and the Air Power Foundation as well. So you've got a real conservative here that you're talking to who really cares, right? So
right. Thank you very, very, very much for all your efforts.
Oh, thank you. I try to do as much as I can for this cause, because I've lived out of the United States and come back to the United States, and I've been in areas where there's no freedom, and people don't understand what their rights are, and we need to get this back into the schools and into, you know, I think our schools have brainwashed children. I really do, and it's really sad to watch people that have become politicians that don't even know the Constitution, do not know the Bill of Rights. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, you know, and you talk about the brainwashing of children. In a lot of the school textbooks, it references the Second Amendment, your right to keep your arms, as a privilege, not a right.
That's right. I want to take a short break here, Alan, if you don't mind, and we'll be right back. Where can people get all of your information before we go on to the break?
Best place is at our website at saf.org, samalphafrank.org, or just put a Second Amendment Foundation in your browser and our website will pop up.
That's wonderful. We'll take a real short break and we'll be right back on Catherine Raker's Let's Just Talk.
Catherine, we'll be right back. You're listening to Let's Just Talk on W4CY.
iMarketing.com provides easily editable websites to small business owners. And if they don't want to make the changes to the site themselves, they can simply email the changes to iMarketing.com and they'll take care of it for no additional cost. iMarketing.com is also a Google certified partner, which means you'll get your website listed on over 1,000 search engines across the internet very quickly. Let iMarketing.com help you get your share of the web today by calling 513-942-7869, or you can email iMarketing.com at sales@imktg.com today.
Did you know that memory loss now affects almost 7 million people in America? And the Alzheimer's Research Foundation estimates that by the year 2050, there will be 50 million people with dementia in America. Are you preparing your family, especially your grandchildren, for this issue? This is Dan Perkins, and I'm the author of a new book for children ages 9 to 12 and their families to help them understand that it's not their fault when Grammy can't remember them. Why Can't Grammy Remember Me is available at Amazon or through your local bookseller. Don't make your grandchildren part of the lost generation.
Hi, this is Catherine Raker. Do you get a headache or a flushed face when you have a glass of wine? Well, I'll tell you why. Because of sulfites and tannins, which are preservatives in wine. Well, I found a product that reduces both the sulfites and tannins, and it's made in the USA. It's called Drop It. It's really simple. You just put a couple of drops in your glass and swirl it around, and guess what? It doesn't change the flavor of the wine, and no more headaches, and it's 100% natural. Go to their website to order at dropitwine.com for no more headaches.
We're back. You're listening to Let's Just Talk with Catherine Raker on W4CY.
We are back on Catherine Raker's Let's Just Talk with a wonderful guest that I'm so excited about, and I really actually want to do a television show with him the next time on our show, Catherine Raker's World. But his name is Alan Gottlieb, and he is a strong advocate of our defense of our country. And he also is the He is actually the publisher and chairman of the Citizens Committee for the Right to Keep and Bear Arms and the founder of the Second Amendment Foundation. And I want to thank you for your mission, for what you do, because people need to hear this from you everywhere. Let me ask you, didn't Joe, we talked about before the break that Joe Biden, if he won the presidency, would put Beto O'Rourke in charge of the administration's gun control policies. And we wouldn't want anybody like that in charge of that, would we?
Obviously not. You've got somebody who's an advocate for gun confiscation, not just gun prohibition. And the last thing we want is people knocking on our front doors, invading our privacy of our homes to take away our firearms, our means of self-defense.
That's for sure. Does the U.S. Constitution grant the right to protect rioting and looting?
I don't think so. I think the U.S. Constitution doesn't protect people committing crimes. And I think rioting and looting is surely, you know, a criminal offense. And so there's no doubt that the people that are rioting and looting out there, and of course, they've also, by the way, tried to rob gun stores. We've had a number of gun stores had to defend themselves with their own firearms in places like Philadelphia and Pittsburgh and other places around the country. So this is really, you know, it shows the, if anything, the rioting and looting going on shows the importance and the need and validates the Second Amendment and the right to keep and bear arms.
You know, President Trump has done so many wonderful things for our country, and I can't imagine having Joe Biden in charge of our country at this point. He believes in releasing violent criminals without bond, impacted gun sales.
Oh, you know, it's even worse than that. Not only for the rioters, these looters, not only do you think that they shouldn't have had bond or bail and they should just been police put out on the streets, but over a dozen members of his key presidential staff made donations to help pay for the bail to get these people out of jail and put them back out on the streets. That's scary.
Yeah, and there's quite a few of them out on the streets right now, aren't there?
Well, in places like Minneapolis, almost all of them, I believe, at this point are out. On bail, and of course, Biden's people in that particular city have bailed them all out. And then, of course, you had in New York the arsonists that the activist left wing, lawyers that tried to firebomb a police car. Luckily, the Molotov cocktail didn't go off. That actually got released on bail, and then the appeals court overturned that. And now they're back in jail again. But it's like, you know, you put these violent people back out on the streets and then you take our firearms away so we can't protect ourselves, our property, our businesses, our homes. This is a really scary times we live in. And Catherine, that's probably why we have record gun sales over the last month. We've hit all-time record highs, even though the gun sales have been high to begin with. And a lot of those buyers are first-time buyers. It's the first time they've ever owned a firearm. And they've gone out to protect themselves and have the means to do so. So that shows people, American people, I think, are voting their Second Amendment rights with their dollars by buying firearms and learning how to use them.
That's for sure. And self-defense. I mean, I see these people getting, I mean, with these riots and these demonstrations and the Antifa and Black Lives Matter and all these people that are so wound up in this situation, I don't think the younger generation really understands what's going on right now. I mean, when you live in a country that is not free, and you look at Venezuela, you look at Cuba, you look at China, I mean, this is in such comparison to China today on what happened during Mao Zedong's rule. It's unbelievable. And I'm a little older. I'm 75, and I got to tell you something. It just frightens me terribly that there's so many young people that are liberals that don't understand what's going on with losing our rights, and that's what's going to happen if you get the Democrats and Biden in there. Can I ask this question? What's this say about Biden's position on public safety? You know, we were just talking about letting all these criminals out, right? If he were to win the top executive position to the land charged with enforcing laws, what laws would he be enforcing, if any?
Well, it's hard for me to answer that question because I don't think Joe Biden knows himself. And at this point, I don't think he remembers what the laws are or what his past voting records have been. I really question his ability at this point to reason and think. I don't think the man, unfortunately, is all there anymore.
Dementia. I think he's got dementia. I really do. I used to run homes for the elderly and assisted living, and this man, he has dementia. Because if he has to be in his basement all the time, his wife, he has to answer a lot of things. And the faux pas that he's done, I think, this is just my opinion, I think he's going to get, if he did get in, he would have one of the radicals run with him, right? He would be gone within a few months, and they would be running our country. That's what frightens me more than anything else.
I can't disagree with you. I'm very worried about his mental capacity, and the people around him are basically, you know, are going to even go further left than he is. This is really scary times we live in, very scary times, and elections have consequences. And for us at the Second Amendment Foundation, since a lot of stuff we do is litigation in the courts, I'm very concerned about who appoints the judges. And, you know, and Donald Trump as president, his nominations have been absolutely great. He's done a very good job of helping straightening out our courts to protect constitutional rights. If Joe Biden gets in, oh, my God.
We really should be frightened for him to get in, or the Democrats, because you know that George Soros is funding all of this. And I can't even believe what they have gotten away with over the past, well, more than 4 years. What they've tried to do to destroy a president is unbelievable. They should be in jail. I really believe that. Can you name one or more rioters or pro-riot groups that have been financially supported by the Biden team?
Well, actually, I can't necessarily say who they've supported financially, but I can tell you I can name radicals and radical groups that have supported the Biden campaign the other way around. You know, George Soros, we just already mentioned him. Michael Bloomberg is going to spend millions and millions of dollars to have try and get Biden elected so they can put in their anti-gun schemes that Bloomberg has funded in a number of organizations, which are also supporting Biden, like, you know, Every Town for Gun Violence, Moms Demand Action. Those groups that Bloomberg also funds are supporting Biden both with money and with endorsements. The Brady Center, one of the nation's oldest anti-gun rights groups, is doing it. Other ones are on state and local basis that are also funded by Bloomberg and Soros as well. We've got a significant cadre of gun prohibitionists all funding Bloomberg's campaign. Biden's campaign. Which I guess, quite frankly, when I said Bloomberg's campaign, he's almost a stand-in for Bloomberg's anti-gun measures. So it's one and the same.
It's true. That's really scary. I can't believe that Soros can control as many groups as possible and as many people as he's done. And, you know, I think that, unfortunately, I think he needs to be put away, you know, in some camp somewhere and let him live like that for a while. I can't imagine.
One of our problems is that the amount of money that he spends funding all these groups then fund these Democratic politicians as well. The way he does it, there's no transparency. So it's hard to see where his money
where
is going.
He is.
It goes from him to another group and then from that group, you know, to funding campaigns, independent expenditures for people like Joe Biden. He's very good at hiding his money. So while he claims he's for open government with the name of one of his groups, he's not for open government. He's for doing anything he can to manipulate the system.
Right. I agree with that totally. It's been reported that a Biden campaign spokesman told Reuters the former vice president opposes the institution of cash bail altogether, calling it modern-day debtor's prison. Can you tell us?
Yes, he has said that. And again, combine that with the fact that all his key campaign people have, you know, donated money to bail these people out of, you know, the rioters, the looters, the arsonists. I mean, when you take a look at that on top of it, this is the kind of administration we would have. You'd want to keep all us law-abiding people defenseless so we can have the means to protect ourselves or our property and put all the violent people back out on the streets with no bail and no bond. You know, wow.
You know, Trump is talking about he's talked about designating Antifa as a terrorist organization. Do you agree with that? And my other question here is the group that's in Seattle right now, right? Why have they captured 16 blocks and nobody, no citizens that are in that region have stood up against them? Why not? What are they afraid of, the guns that they have?
No, the area that they've captured is so left-wing and so radical that, quite frankly, all it is all kinds of left-wing businesses and crazy stuff. And so it's like an enclave area in Seattle that's so left of center that they actually have elected a socialist to represent them in the city council. So there's nobody there that cares about anything that they're doing because they all agree with it. Those are the people who are the protesters. They live there.
Oh, I understand. It does make a lot of sense. But there are some people apparently that are trying to get out of there. Why wouldn't, now this is going to sound a little crazy, okay, but why not, don't allow them out of that area? And if they do, they need to have a passport into the United States because they've made it a territory more so than they have in the state of Washington. Am I correct or wrong?
Yeah, they've done some of that. I think it's diminishing a little bit now because a few of the businesses that are there are upset that they can't get it. The customers can't come in and purchase items there. So some of that's dissipating a little bit. But you're dealing with they should call it Looney Tune Town rather than an area of Seattle.
Okay. So Seattle could just basically say, you're not part of this anymore. And if you want to go in there, you're not going to get to go in there. But if they want to come out, I'm serious, they should have a passport in order to get into the rest of Seattle. I mean, it's ridiculous what's going on. So what do you think?
Our problem is, though, is that the politicians in Seattle are so left-wing themselves. They're secretly cheering this all on.
Where can people, again, get more information on the Second Amendment Foundation, which I think everybody should support?
Again, the best place is on the web at saf.org, samalphafrank.org. All of our lawsuits, by the way, are there. We're involved in at this point over 30 federal lawsuits protecting gun rights around the country, and they're all listed there, along with all of our other activities that we're engaged in: our public education, legal defense, education, research, publishing. It's all up on the website at saf.org.
All right, and thank you so much. And stay with me right after the program for 1 minute. I'm going to say goodbye. Thank you so very much for joining me for your mission that you're doing to help protect America. And don't forget to go to our website at letsjusttalkradio.com. We'll see you next time on Catherine Raker's Let's Just Talk.
Catherine will be right back. You're listening to Let's Just Talk on W4CY.
Buoyancy PR, telling your story, keeping your message afloat. Okay, enough about us. Let's talk about you. You have a great story to tell, whether it's a product, a new book, or a worthy cause. You have a message worth hearing. Buoyancy PR will help you fine-tune that message and get it over the sea of information. Who, what, where, when, how, and why? These classic questions of a news story will introduce you to Buoyancy PR. After you've had a chance to get acquainted, let us know what we can do for you. For more information, contact Joni Sullivan Baker at 513-319-3231 or go to buoyancypr.com.
Hi, this is Karen Sokolov-Javich, and I just became a grandma and wrote 17 songs for my new babies.
Splishy, splashy in the bathy. Splishy, splashy in the tub.
Share my smiling baby song album with your little ones.
You got 10 fingers and...
Order my baby album and you'll receive my children's album for free. Just call JMR Productions at 402-393-3893 for your special gift. That's 402-393-3893.
We're back. You're listening to Let's Just Talk with Catherine Raker on W4CY.
Hi, this is Catherine Raker of Let's Just Talk. You know, due to the stay-at-home orders and the fears and anxieties associated with the COVID-19 pandemic, many people, especially those with chronic illness, have been reluctant to visit their doctors. Joining us today to discuss these concerns and what patients should be doing is Dr. Donald Rebon, a practicing internist and the regional medical director at Optum. Good morning, doctor. How are you today?
Good morning, Catherine. Thanks for having me.
Well, you know, it's so wild about the whole pandemic and whatever, even for me when I had it. But, you know, going to your doctor is really important, too. According to the CDC, roughly 6 out of every 10 adults in the United States have a chronic illness. What should they be doing to make sure that they can get the care they need, doctor?
Yes, thanks for asking
and
that.
And welcoming. Welcome to my show. I'm sorry I didn't say that first, but go ahead.
Yeah, so patients with chronic illnesses are of particular concern right now. They are normally more susceptible than the general public, but particularly right now, they're at increased risk for exposure to COVID-19 and all other infectious diseases. We know that through appropriate management, a person can avoid many of the serious complications that can come from their illness. So message that's so important is it's important to stay on top of your, and the best way to do that is to make sure you're seeing or communicating with your primary care doctor.
The other thing, if you're living alone, doctor, wouldn't it be good to have, number one, actually things that are all of your medications and everything on, there's a little box that the fire department has that you can have it put on the front part of your door, and also let your close relative, if they live alone, would that be good?
Absolutely. Many people with chronic diseases are on multiple medications. It's hard to keep track. We recommend many of our patients to have pill boxes, which remind them that they themselves or a relative can fill them up once a week, and it's a great reminder to take it appropriately. So during this period, as well as normally, as any type of devices or reminders really allows you to go along with the plan that you've developed with a physician. And that's a great idea, and I encourage all your if you fall into a category that you're taking more than one or two pills a day, think about using a device like that. That's a great reminder.
Right. The CDC also said that vaccination rates among children have fallen at alarming rates during the pandemic. Do you have any suggestions for concerned parents?
Yeah. So, parents have a lot of anxiety, both themselves and their family, but particularly for their children. And as a result of the pandemic, many have avoided the routine checks in your children, and with that, have not had their children vaccinated. As you mentioned, this concern, local health department's concern. Actually, a recent study published by Optum found that one of the most common vaccines, called the MMR, which stands for measles rubella, has fallen as much as 43% during the first 4 years compared to last year at this time. So, those delays really opened this virus to come into our communities. And as we've observed in past years, we have outbreaks of these very preventable that can be extremely serious. We've actually observed tragically that they've had a number of deaths of young children because of not being vaccinated. So important right now, and I'm glad you brought it up, to reach out to your pediatrician's office, talk with them. You'll learn about the safeguards that which will make you feel more comfortable. You can get back on that schedule of immunizations.
Right. I mean, it's so important because with some of these simple, vaccines that we have and shots that we have for children, there are certain diseases that if children give them to adults, right, it's a lot worse for the adult, especially certain types of diseases. Would you agree?
Absolutely, absolutely. Our
like shingles.
Shingles, actually. Right. Actually, shingles is a disease that we get as a young child and are kind of latent in our body. But, we've had parents get mumps if they hadn't been exposed. And some of the other diseases, and absolutely, you're spot on. It can be very serious. It can be.
So as some states begin their reopening process, which a lot of us already have, what safeguards and procedures are doctors putting in place for in-person visits? And I just did one, and it's wild. I loved it because I felt so safe when I went to the doctor's office. But would you go ahead and tell our listeners, please, doctor?
Sure. Depending on where you're receiving your care, as you point out, under normal circumstances, try to make sure our office is as clean as possible, infecting the day. But now with the virus, we have many additional safeguards in place. Every patient that actually drives into our facilities are stopped. They're asked a number of questions, particularly that linked with the COVID virus. We do temperature checks on everybody coming in. We make sure masks are worn. If they don't have one, we're happy to give all our patients. We reassure them how many times a day we are washing hands. All our teammates, as we call our employees, clinicians, everyone that works in our office also goes through these same measures of questions each morning and a temperature check when both ourselves and every patient walk in. Some of the other unique additions made for safeguards is after this check-in, patients to actually wait in their car, and we'll either go get them or text them when it's their turn. So don't have crowded waiting rooms. There's actually one or two safely separated in the waiting room. We ask that you come alone if possible and don't bring visitors, again, limiting the chance there can be any exposure whatsoever. So this increased disinfecting of everything we have that you'll and social distancing and masking, all these things that you've been told about are also done in the office and probably would be for some.
Right. Where can people go to get additional information, and do you have a website, doctor? I would appreciate it.
Yeah. So first of all, your doctor is a great resource for information. The first step, start giving them a call, hope to establish a trusted relationship. They have your best interests in mind, so that's a first place to start. But there are also a number of respected health organizations, other groups in the United States have websites that are more reliable, such as the centers or your local health department reporting into websites almost every day. We do have a website as well that can offer you some helpful tips and locations. That's optumcare.com. It's optumcare.com/back to care.
Optumcare.com/back to care. Back to care. I've got it. Thank you so very much for your mission and what you're doing for us. We really appreciate all of this information, and thank you for joining us today, Doctor.
Thank you.
And we'll be right back.
Catherine, we'll be right back. You're listening to Let's Just Talk on W4CY.
Hi, this is Catherine Raker of Let's Just Talk. Do you want to read wonderful novels about historic wonderful places in Youngstown, Ohio, then you need to get Don Greco's books. He's a wonderful author that wrote the series, The Youngstown Quintet. His latest book is The Maladrin. And the nice thing about his books are they're not about spies. They're not about zombies. They're just ordinary people that read that have extraordinary lives. So visit DonGrecoNovels.com or go buy his books on Amazon.com.
We're back. You're listening to Let's Just Talk with Catherine Raker on W4CY.
Hi, this is Catherine Raker of Let's Just Talk in Catherine Raker's World. You know, the fear of COVID-19 and keeping stroke patients from calling 911 and going to the hospital. Even during a pandemic, stroke is a medical emergency that requires immediate attention and can be disabling or even fatal. Our guest today is Dr. Patrick Lydon, Professor of Neurology in Carmen and Lewis Warshaw Chair at the Neurology at Cedars-Sinai. Welcome to our show, Doctor. How are you today?
Wonderful. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. You know, one of the things that I think has frightened a lot of people is just going to the hospital or the emergency room and, you know, not knowing what a stroke really is. Can you tell our listeners what is a stroke and how common is a stroke and who's at risk?
Well, stroke is the commonest cause of disability in the world. 800,000 Americans every year will have a stroke. A stroke occurs when part of the brain stops working, usually because the artery that supplies blood to that part of the brain has been blocked off. And when that happens, part of the brain starts to die. It starts to die immediately. So we say minutes matter, time is brain, because if we can get that patient into a stroke center, we have treatment that will work.
And, you know, can you describe some of the signs of stroke and how our listeners and viewers can easily remember them?
Yeah. Well, the easiest thing to remember is anything that happens suddenly and affects one part of the body. So sudden blindness, sudden weakness on one side. But we have a mnemonic to keep it straight, and that's called FAST, F-A-S-T, face, arm, speech, time. So if the patient has a droopy face on one side or arm weakness on one side or their speech is slurred and all of that happens suddenly, then T is for time. It's time to call 911 right now and get help.
Why is recognizing the sudden onset of symptoms important, especially now? Isn't it important for especially someone that may be, and there's no age, you can have a stroke at any age, am I correct?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. Stroke occurs at any age.
And so if someone had a stroke and you and you don't, especially an older person, don't you think it's nice to have an emergency little thing that they can touch and they can contact the hospital or 911?
Absolutely. So there's no reason to hesitate. Paramedics are trained to evaluate possible stroke patients. They know that there are some things that mimic a stroke, like low blood sugar or a seizure. They're trained to evaluate you for that. And they know where the closest stroke center is. So call 911, let the professionals take over and get you to the place where stroke treatment is waiting for you.
What would you say to patients who don't want to go to the hospital in fear of being exposed to COVID-19? And there's so much out there about COVID-19 that I want you to explain that, because I think it's more important to go to the hospital for a stroke situation than to worry about COVID-19, because I've had COVID-19, and a lot of people, when they do get it, they're like cases. So don't you think it's more important to be in the hospital with a stroke?
Well, look, a stroke is something that we know you have it and we know how to treat it. Okay, we can deal with it. A COVID-19 infection is a possible risk out there. In a restaurant or in a closed environment, you might catch it. But in the hospital, we've taken all the precautions. Everything is sterilized. Everybody's gowned and masked. When you arrive there, you're going to get a gown and a mask. So being in an emergency department with the stroke team is one of the safest places you can be. So give us the chance. Come in soon. Let us evaluate you. And if you have a stroke, treat that stroke.
Well, the wonderful thing about going into the hospitals today and the emergency rooms and the doctors is that there's only certain people that are allowed. They take your temperature, correct? They do a lot of things to prepare for you walking in the door, right?
That's right. There's a whole protocol of precautions that we're going to take. You know, we need to protect ourselves. We need to protect you. We need to protect you from other patients. And as I say, there's fewer places that are safer other than just staying home, which we don't want you to do if you have a stroke, because we have treatment. Time is brain, minutes matter. Get into a stroke center where we can evaluate you safely and take care of whatever might be causing your symptoms.
Can you explain, and this is so important because I had to deal with a few things with my elderly parents, and can you explain why it's so important for friends and loved ones to check in with those who are at risk of stroke, especially now, and to make sure that you check on them anyhow, correct?
Absolutely right. I mean, it's so interesting. The brain is the part of your body that knows when something's wrong. So if the stroke is what's wrong, it affects your brain. You're not able to act. You're not able to call 911 yourself. So it's very important to check on people and to be aware of those symptoms that we mentioned. And if they occur in someone you are a loved one or a friend or just someone you're with standing on the street corner, it's time to call 911 if you detect one of those symptoms in someone.
Can you explain why, doctor, there have been reports of increase in stroke in a younger patient population? Because this is so important to understand, that we talked about in the beginning of the interview, that it doesn't matter how old you are, it can happen to anyone.
That's exactly right. So we know that stroke is occurring more often in the age group 20 to 40 than any other age group. The rate of increase is the highest in that age group. And it's primarily due to some of the unusual causes of stroke, like migraines, like a torn carotid artery, like drug use. In the older age group, over the age of 60, we expect strokes to occur in people with high blood pressure, diabetes, high cholesterol, atherosclerosis. But stroke does occur in young people. Now, whether there's a connection to the virus, that's an open question, right? It seems like maybe young patients with COVID are having more strokes than we would expect, but it's too early to know yet. We're still collecting data on
it. Wouldn't you say that with our stress levels today, that doesn't help much either? Correct?
It doesn't help, I'll say that. And especially if people forget to take their medications, if they need any, if they forget to exercise, if they go off their regular diet, those are all things that are going to promote a stroke risk. And sleep, losing sleep is actually one of the more potent triggers for causing a stroke or a heart attack.
Is stroke preventable? And what are some of the common risk factors people should be aware of, doctor?
Stroke is absolutely preventable. One of the most important things you can do to lower your risk of stroke and heart attack is don't smoke. Not smoking is more powerful than all the medications that I can give. Plus, keep your blood pressure under control. If you have diabetes, keep your blood sugar under control. Get your cholesterol down. If you're a little overweight, lose the 10 pounds. Those things will do more for you than I can do for you, especially if you smoke and stop doing
it. Right. Well, I quit smoking, I don't know, 25, 30 years ago, and it's really changed my life. And I see young kids smoking today, and it really scares me and frightens me for them because they don't realize what they're putting into their bodies, you know? So, I mean, if you're a parent, let's talk to them, you know, and maybe another person that has already quit that they might look up to. So can you give me your website? Because I think it's important for people to go up there and look for these things and educate themselves as far as how they can prevent a stroke and what to be looking for.
So the American Heart Association, American Stroke Association, has an extensive website. The best way to start is at stroke.org, stroke.org. There's articles about stroke treatment, what is a stroke, and per your request, a lot on prevention, how to prevent stroke by treating high blood pressure, diabetes, et cetera. There's also a website called strokeawareness.com. That website has useful information for you and your family as well.
Doctor, I can't thank you enough for your mission and what you're trying to help us with, because it's so important to get that person to the hospital as soon as possible, because you can, you know, can prevent a lot of other things from happening. And that's the reason why it's so important to call 911 or get to that person to the hospital. Am I correct?
Absolutely right. Time is brain. Minutes matter. Act right now. Thank you for having me.
And thank you so much. And we'll be right back after these important messages on Catherine Raker's Let's Just Talk.
You've been listening to Let's Just Talk with Catherine Raker. Sponsored by
Buoyancy PR, Joni Sullivan Baker, Dan Perkins, author, Don Greco, novels, Drop It, Dr. James Butler, smile artist, Thames Chocolates, JMR Productions, Songs and Stories for Soldiers, and Vital, Champions of Liberty.
You're listening to W4CY.